Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Smigalski, the Beer Fox, the editor of Beer and Brewing at Bella Online. Welcome to the 33rd annual Great American Beer Festival. Our presentation this hour is Master Pairings, the past, present, and future of craft beer and food pairings. Our presenter today is a legend in the beer world. He boasts a beer collection of over 3,000 beers, has tasted over 40,000 different beers, has visited Belgium 35 times. He's attended the Great American Beer Festival 26 of those 33 times. And he has visited over 1,500 breweries. He serves as the craft beer ambassador at Stone Brewing World and Bistro Gardens. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Bill Sisak. Working with Dr. Bill this afternoon is the first chef of Denver to become a certified Cicerone. He's the founder of Heroes Like Us and his culinary partner, the B-Side and Slotted Spoon Meatball Eatery. He was honored with the Colorado Restaurant Association Philanthropist Signature Dish Award this April in 2014. And you'll see him later today, Jensen Cummings. Now I'll hand it over to Dr. Bill.
Jensen, you haven't had his food yet.
Let's hear it for Jensen. You haven't had his food yet, but you will be applauding. Thank you, Carolyn.
You're welcome. And if anybody wants to ask questions at any time during this presentation, just put up your hand and I'll be out there.
How are you guys enjoying GABF? Awesome. Yeah, I always love coming out. The joke is, I blew it last year because I went to CBC, but the joke was always, you've been to Denver 25 times, you've been to 25 GABFs. And it's such a great town, I just never make it out excepting for that event. But I'm glad you guys are enjoying yourself. Before you dig in there, let me talk to you a little about beer and food pairings. So I've been doing a master pairings for about 30 years, three decades, since I was not even old enough to drink, but I'll tell you about that later. Beer is by far the most versatile of all the beverages in the world. I'm an expert in spirits and wine and cigars and food, obviously, but beer mainly. And the reason why beer is so great and versatile, it has carbonation, which is like scrubbing bubbles on the palate. It has bitterness, which cuts through the richest fats, chocolate, cheeses, meats. It has sweetness, which handles the hottest chili, but it also can accentuate heat. How many people like spicy food out there? Awesome. If you like spicy food, have a great IPA with it. It'll calm it in the, there's three problem areas when you have spicy food. I'm only going to talk about those two of those areas. One on the front of the lips, one down the throat, and you can imagine where the third one is. The area in the middle is your mid palate, and when you have a spicy food with something hoppy or bitter, what happens, it accentuates the heat. So it calms it in the right place, but accentuates it. And finally, beer is made with roasted grains. So the color of your beer is determined by the grains that they're picked to do the style of beer, whether it's a pale ale or a stout. So those grains are kind of like roasting coffee beans, and they change flavor the more intense you roast them. So what happens is they match a fancy chef term called the Maillard reaction. The Maillard reaction is the non-enzymatic browning of meats and bread. So basically, what does that mean? That means when you smell bread baking, or sorry for any of you vegetarians out there, when you sear a big piece of meat on the grill and you smell it, that's the Maillard reaction coming through. And that's why beer is so amazing and versatile. Now, how many of you guys have had a craft beer before? I know it's the stupidest question in the world, right? Everybody here has. I'm going to be bold. I'm going to teach you guys how to drink a beer. That's why I want you to wait. I know, what a cocky asshole I am. But it's not how you're going to do it when you go in the Falling Rock, for example, because they'll look at you funny and slide you down to the end of the bar. But when we're judging beer, assessing new beer styles, doing pairings, this is kind of what we do. So the way you do it is, first of all, you should smell your beer. So you should swirl your beer around and smell it. Basically what happens, you breathe in ortho and retronasally to your olfactory gland, to your brain, to your gustatory nerves, to your taste buds. And what does that do? It tells you what you're going to taste. The combination for flavor is aroma plus taste equal flavor. How many of you guys know that 90% of all taste is aroma? It sounds kind of crazy because you got taste buds, right? It shouldn't be. But if you've ever been sick and stuffy and not been able to taste the beer properly, that's because you can't smell it. We've all been out drinking late at night, I'm assuming. Getting a ride home. And in California, we go by a place called In-N-Out Burger, and you can smell it, and you go, God, I shouldn't stop for a 1,000-calorie burger, but next thing you know, your designated driver's pulling in the drive-through so you can have that burger because you're smelling it. It's your olfactory glands kicking in. Early prehistoric man needed to do that because they didn't have 7-Elevens. They didn't have a nachos and chili cheese dogs to go to. So if they saw a dead animal, they didn't know whether it smelled good or bad to know whether they can eat and survive. The ones that use their nose are our ancestors. The other ones are no longer with us. So now I've been torturing you guys enough. You smelled it. Now I want you guys to taste it. Take a little sip, vigorously swish it around your mouth. That cleanses your palate from the cigar I just had or the gum he just stuck under that table or all the great beers you've had out here. Now I want you to take a little sip and let it roll to the front of your palate, part your lips and pull air back. Like that, open it and kind of slurp back. That opens your palate. Be careful, don't look directly at the person in front of you because if it goes down the wrong way, it's going to spray them. That opens your palate. So a hoppy beer is not as bitter. A sour beer is not as tart. How many people like a nice Cabernet? I do, it's okay. It won't be as tannic. Isla whiskey drinkers out there, it won't be as peaty. So that's the reason why we do it. And then you get the true taste of the beer. So this is our, go ahead and enjoy. Sorry for the torture. This is our Stone Pale Ale, 5.4% pale ale that we've been brewing for 18 years. It's got really nice mix of citrus and pine from the hops and a little caramel and toffee from the malts. And with it, our amazing chef has made a fried bologna sandwich. What the heck? I thought we were having some gourmet food here. This tasting is all about the past, present, and future. So being that the pale ale is truly the first American craft beer, once you jump over the fact that we had a beer called Anchor Steam from that Fritz Maytag started the whole craft beer revolution, but Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, one of the most important beers in history. This is, of course, our Stone Pale Ale. We call it the Other Pale Ale. It has a really nice balance. I call it a utility player when it comes to pairing because it can basically pair with anything. It goes beautifully with pub food, fried things, spicy things, and it's going to go great. And so when I talked to Jensen, who I'm going to introduce in 2 seconds, I said, let's go back to our past. So what did we have when we were kids? I'm a little older than some of you, so fried bologna sandwiches were a classic. So we decided to have them with the pale ale. So I want you guys to enjoy, try it. I'm going to invite Jensen up here. He's going to tell you a little about this dish and about himself. Come on up, Jensen. Let's have a round of applause for Jensen.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to see you, Bill. How's everyone doing? You guys all GABFing? Come on. You guys can do better than that. This is GABF 2014. Come on. There we go. That's better. So like Bill said, past, present, and future. We're going to have a lot of fun with this today. My name is Jensen Cummings. I'm a chef here in Denver, also a certified Cicerone. So anytime there's beer and food pairing, you can usually find me lurking around somewhere. I'm also this year's National Hop Chef Champion, Oma Gang's Hop Chef Champion. So last year at GABF, I was on this stage. Yeah, you guys can applaud for that. That's pretty cool. Yeah, we'll take it. So last year I was up on this stage and Oma Gang does a Hop Chef competition. It's a beer and food pairing competition. They do it in 7 cities across the country. And so I won here in Denver and then went and represented for Denver in New York in August at their big festival at the brewery and was able to bring home the championship. So we're pretty excited here in Denver to have the National Hop Chef Champion in town. So yeah, cool stuff. So when Bill called me and said, we're gonna do a beer and food pairing and we wanna get a little weird, I said, absolutely, I'll get weird with you all day. So past, present, and future, this first dish, there's nothing more iconic to me than a fried bologna sandwich. And so we wanted to just get really goofy with it. Fried bologna, American cheese, pickles that we infused with some centennial hops. So this is a reoccurring theme you'll see throughout all three dishes, is that we took an element of beer and imposed it into the dish. So I'll tell you a little bit about kind of the next dish as well. Is this pairing pretty good? Yeah? You can't go wrong with fried bologna sandwiches,
right? It was good 20 years ago, I know that.
If it ain't broke. So the next dish that we're going to do, I'll tell you about it because I got to get back there and plate a whole bunch of these. So in 1996, Stone Brewing started in San Marcos, California. And I started high school in Vista, California, about 5 minutes away in 1996. So we wanted to take 1996 as our present, as in when we really started out. And so in 1996, I know all day, every day, I ate Southern California-style fish tacos, right? So we're going to give you guys some fish tacos. So this dish is really cool. There's a lot of layers of spice in it and pepper. And what's really nice about that is whenever you add some spice elements, you really exacerbate heat when you pair it with hops. So we got that IPA. So we have a nice heat foundation in this next dish. But when you taste it with the beer, this IPA, which is not weak on the hops, to say the least, it's going to take that spice level up a little bit. So it'll be really nice when you taste the food without the beer. You'll get that kind of monotone spice, and as soon as you get those hops into your mouth, that spice level is going to shoot up. So it should be really nice. So you got a little sea bass, some masa corn tortillas, a little cabbage slaw. Then we do an achiote sauce. Achiote is ground annatto that we cook with garlic, onions, some allspice, some cinnamon. So it has a little bit of kind of a holiday spice, which is really nice as well. And we finish it with some escabeche. Escabeche is the ubiquitous carrots, jalapenos, and onions that you see on like the nacho bars at like the really good taco places. So what we did was we took some saison yeast and did a secondary fermentation on the escabeche. So we basically pickled them, and then we pitched active yeast into there and let it ferment for another about 48 hours. So what's really cool is you get that sharp acidity, and then you just get a little bit of funk on the back end from that saison yeast, and even a little bit of a sweetness from kind of that bubblegum character that you get from saison yeast sometimes. So hopefully you guys enjoy. I'll be back to bug you a little bit. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Jensen. So now, as Jensen said, we're kind of talking about the present. But I'm going to jump back real quick, give him a minute to plate. That was my past, fried bologna sandwiches. I would love to tell you that was my very first pairing, but it wasn't. I started drinking craft beer in 1977 when I was 15 years old, right when Michael Jackson, not the gentleman with only one glove, but the famous beer and whiskey writer, came out with his book, World's Guide to Beer, right when Jimmy Carter signed the law legalizing home brewing, right when Jack McAuliffe started New Albion Brewery. So my dad and I and a group of friends started tasting 2 6-packs of beer every Friday and Saturday for 3 years, from the time I was 15 to 18. So by the time that rolled around, we had a room in my house that had over 3,000 empty beer bottles. Now, one of those beers I was trying in 1978 was a beer called Anchor Old Foghorn. You might know it, a great English-style barley wine. Used to be in little nip bottles. So how I discovered my first pairing, even before I ever went to Belgium, I got hungry. We were sitting there on a Saturday doing all this. I went in the kitchen and made myself a PBJ. You know, it wasn't fancy stuff. It was probably Wonder Bread, Smucker's, and I like strawberry, not grape. Smucker's and Skippy. Reached into the milk carton. It was empty. I yelled at my three older sisters, but of course it was probably me. So I went back to the table, took a bite, tried to say something. So I had to grab my old foghorn and taste it. All of a sudden, it was amazing. Caramel and toffee notes from the beer, strawberry and peanut butter coming across my palate. I basically made everybody eat my nasty sandwich and try it with the beer. And it's all been downhill from there. I've just traveled around the world doing pairings. That was my past. Now we're going to talk about the present. And I know Jensen talked about how he was in school in 96 and how fish tacos have been around in San Diego, the home of the fish taco. But they're getting more and more creative. And likewise, beers are more and more creative. By the way, today is the best day in the history of the world to be a craft beer drinker. It's true. And I'll tell you why, and you guys are going to applaud even more. It's not because you're here with me. It's not because you're at GABF. It's because every day is only going to get better. We're at 3,200 breweries. We'll be at 5,000 breweries in 2 years. Our brewers are who were influenced by England, Germany, and Belgium are now influencing those countries. You can go to Munich and have a craft beer IPA from a little microbrewery. You can go to England and have 20 little craft breweries to choose from. There's all these hoppy Belgian IPAs now. Those are all from us. Our brewers are the most creative and successful brewers in the world. I'm not talking about BMC brewers, sorry. I'm talking about, BMC, that means beers with blue mountains on them or Clydesdales that kick field goals at Super Bowl. I'm talking about craft beer, full-flavored beer. So let's have a round of applause for craft beer because this is it. Now, the beauty of it is tomorrow it's only going to be better, and the next day it's going to be better. So any day when you're introducing somebody to craft beer, and I hope you guys all are constantly, you can tell them that it's the greatest day in the history of the world to be a craft beer drinker. So speaking of that, our brewers are creative at Stone, just like all these amazing brewers. So the beer we're pouring you now, and you guys look like a savvy bunch, so let me give you a little tip on this. Remember how I made you guys do that two-sip thing? I'm gonna move you to beer 201. Now you can just do this. Now you just combine them. More beer for you to drink. Look at that. Genius. It's actually a really good life learning lesson because I'm pretty sure all of us at one time or another have poured ourselves a glass of orange juice in the morning, gone up and brushed our teeth, and came back out and said, damn it. If you follow those two sips and do that, you'll be able to salvage your orange juice. You won't have to put it back in the fridge. So the beer we're pouring today is our Stone 18th Anniversary IPA, a hoppy brown IPA. It's kind of unique, and this is why I'm saying the present, because brewers now are using all kinds of creative characteristics. So instead of using the classic malt bill, we're using some English chocolate malts in it. So it gives you an aroma of lemon, orange zest, lemongrass from the hops, but also gives you this great cocoa and very light coffee note. When you taste it, it's going to have more of that. It's going to have orange zest in it. It's going to have tropical fruit. It's going to have more coffee and toffee and cocoa. And then all throughout, it's going to have lemon. At the very end, you're going to get a kind of a lemon starburst effect. And that's from the El Dorado hops we're using. So this is going to go amazing. I think I got two cases, but save a little for your food, okay? I know it's good, but try to... Oh, she didn't do it. Hold your hand up if you were bad. Okay, so she's going to need a little more beer. I've got extra up here if we need it. All right, I got to pour myself some, sorry. Beer break. How many of you have been to a beer and food pairing before? Awesome. How many have done your own beer and food pairing? Awesome. I'd like to see next year everybody's hands up. It's really easy to do. I do a series called Master Pairings where I pair anything in the world. I've laid a challenge out there that there's not a food item in the world I can't pair with beer. And what does that mean? That means there's not a food item you guys can't pair with beer as long as you practice. You don't have to practice as much as I do, but you can practice. Anything pairs with beer. Last year I did beer and donuts here. I've done beer and breakfast, beer and sushi. I've done beer and cereal where we replace the milk with the beer, and it's amazing. There's not a thing in the world that doesn't pair perfectly. Easy way to get started at home, get a bunch of truffles. Nowadays, chocolate truffles have amazing infused flavors. Or if you're a cheese person, get a bunch of different cheeses. Have all your friends bring two or three of their favorite beer styles and come and sit down and try your own pairings. The goal when I'm pairing food and beer is to excite your palate, to make it amazing for you. It's not to give you an obvious pairing. It's to give you that wow factor. I want you to look at my menus when you come to my dinners and go, what the F is he thinking? That cannot possibly go together. How does carrot cake and double IPA go together? Well, it does. Carrot cake's amazing with double IPA. When you take a drink of the beer, it brings out all the sweetness of the carrots. And then when you eat it can't be that healthy carrot cake. It has to have like an inch of cream cheese frosting on top. When you have that frosting, it brings out all the citrus notes from the hops. And it's just an amazing vehicle that works really well together. But it's a really fun concept to do and really easy for doing pairing events. I've done 11 course tequila dinners. I've done wine dinners. None of them hold up to beer. And how many people think wine and cheese go together? They're okay, but they don't go together. If you ask a sommelier or a master sommelier, they'll tell you. They'll go, yeah, wine and cheese doesn't really go together. It's a traditional thing that they've done for centuries. Historically in Europe, you have what's called the grape belt, the grain belt, and everything else belt. So the southern countries could grow grapes. The middle countries can grow grain, so they did beer. When you're up in the far north where it was cold, they couldn't grow anything, so they had bees, so they'd make honey and have mead. The truth of it is, every civilization, every successful civilization in the history of the world has consumed alcohol, and why wouldn't they? So they're always having these different changes and challenges. And we always talk about regionality, where if you go to Germany, there's a reason why you have a German beer with German food. Well, the reason why is, during the Middle Ages, water was poisonous, so you couldn't drink the water, so you drank the beer. And could you imagine having pork or smoked eel, which are the two main proteins in a lot of areas of southern Germany, with the beer, and every time you took a sip, you said, yuck? So they either changed the food or they changed the beer to make them commune. Wine and cheese, historically, once again, we didn't have 7-Elevens back when everybody lived in rural areas. So what they would do is they'd have their animals to milk and have milk and cheese. They'd bake their own bread. They'd have their own harvest of grains or fruit or vegetables. And maybe they'd get a little protein. So it was just a historical thing. They'd have cheese and wine. Or if you're farther up north, cheese and beer. Well, what happened was, in the United States in the early 20s and 30s, in the big cities, there were Italian restaurants and nice French restaurants. And the French restaurants would bring in nice Camembert and things like that from France. And the Italian restaurants would always have a big wheel of Gran Padano, some Parmesan cheese. And they'd have their own wine. They'd have Chianti from Italy, or Champagne, Burgundy, or Bordeaux from France. And so what would happen is, other restaurants would say, you're supposed to have cheese and you're supposed to have wine together with it. Well, before Robert Mondavi and Kendall Jackson in the 60s, American wine sucked. I mean, it was horrendous. And so they started getting stinky cheeses to hide the flavor of the wine. That's why, for those of you old enough to understand, to know, who's seen a Tom and Jerry cartoon before? You ever see when they stick that stinky cheese underneath and it wafts up and they have crossed out eyeballs because they've passed out? Why do you think we know Limburger? How many of you guys have had Limburger in the last 5 years? Exactly, like four of you. That's because they had to bring those in to hide the poor quality table wine that was being produced in California and other parts of the country. Why does beer go so much better? Think about it. What do cows, goats, sheep, and buffalo, I hope you're not milking any other animals, what do they eat? Grains and grass, right? What's beer made out of? Grains and grass. So if you take some sheep that are in a field that has lavender, their milk and cheese is going to have notes of lavender. If you have that with Belgian Saison that has lavender infused in it, you're gonna think you've gone to heaven. So beer and cheese is the way to go. I drink wine and cheese, but I don't think about it. If I'm thinking about it, I'm always going to do what pairs right. So you should have this wonderful dish in front of you. Go ahead and try it. I'll give you a moment of silence to respect fish taco, I guess. And I want to try it myself, and we'll be right back. How many of you guys like the beer on its own? How many of you guys like the fish taco? How many of you guys like them together? You gotta like heat. It brings out that heat on that mid palate. So now you know exactly. I wanted to use that as an example of how that works together. What I love to see and where I started to go with the carrot cake before I got rambling about wine and cheese was that I want, the best compliments I get are when people say, Dr. Bill, I would never drink that a glass of that beer, or I'd never eat that dish, but together they worked really well and they were fun. And that's what it's all about. That's what you want to achieve when you're doing pairings. You want to find things that work well together. Are we pouring the third beer for time constraints? Awesome. No? Who still needs some? She's got a little bit of that left. Are there any questions out there before I go take you into the future? How many of you guys have heard the terms contrast and complementary? Those are terms invented by the wine industry once again because they had to come up with something because so many wines contrast with food. You have a lot of issues because wine has such a high pH balance. It doesn't have carbonation excepting a very small percentage that have sparkling wine. So most wines don't pair with spicy foods. They have problems with things like artichokes or asparagus. Although I will tell you, being a wine expert, if you like asparagus and you want to have wine with it, have a nice French Roussanne. It goes pretty well together. But most of the time, they don't work that well together. So those are really terms created by the wine industry. And as the craft beer industry has grown and craft beer and food pairers have had kind of taken that under their wing, complementary and contrasting, because it's a good concept that's out there. But I don't believe in it. Let me back up a little. This is the future of beer pairings. There are no rules. Let your palate be the guide. That's all that matters. I don't care if I tell you something's going to suck together. If you like it, you enjoy it. That's what's important. Every single beer and food pairing out there in the world has complementary and contrasting notes to it. Might be 90% to 10%, but they're there. Where a lot of times when you were working with wine, it's very extreme. For example, if I said we were going to have an imperial stout with a chocolate lava cake, how many of you would say that's a complementary pairing? It is, because it's chocolate and chocolate, right? But you also have coffee notes in there in the beer. And when even though you're used to drinking coffee with dessert, and it seems natural, the bitterness from the coffee is contrasting with the sweetness of the chocolate. So that's an example of how you think a slam dunk thing that you say is complementary works together with both complementary and contrasting notes. So it's always important to remember that. But the main thing, if I get anything across to you tonight, or today, I guess, I was out late. I haven't gone to sleep yet. There are no rules. Make your own rules. There's great books out there to get you guys started. Matter of fact, Garrett Oliver, the great brewmaster from Brooklyn Brewery, wrote the seminal book on beer and food pairings called The Brewmaster's Table. And that's a great guideline for you to start with. But you don't have to follow all those. You can try those and line up three or four other beers with that pairing and see if there's something you like better. Because that's really what it's all about. So how'd you guys like this pairing? Good? Sucks? Does anybody think it sucked? It's okay if you did. You do? You thought it sucked? Why? Tell us why. She's going to come to you. You just relax. We're full service here, even though you're beating me up a little bit. No.
You were expecting it.
I did.
I actually thought the beer by itself was quite lovely.
Can you hold it a little closer so I can hear?
Sure. I thought the beer by itself was quite lovely, and it did definitely bring up the spice that was in the tacos.
Which is what I wanted, yes.
But it completely defeated the fish.
Yes, it did.
It completely defeated the main piece of what we were talking
about. That's a perfect question. I love that you asked that question. Thank you so much. That's okay. And here's why it's okay. If you go fishing and you catch a great piece of fish and you want to make a fish taco, you want to taste that fish. But what you have to remember when you're doing pairings is it's not all about one thing. So I can tell you right now a brown ale or a porter will go great with a steak. But here's the difference. If you guys were all chefs out there and I all asked you to make a sirloin steak with a parsnip puree, sautéed greens, red wine demi-glace, they'd all taste differently. I'm going to give you guys all credit for cooking a perfect steak. But your seasoning's going to be different. Your cooking methods might be different. Somebody may sous vide it. Somebody might grill it. Somebody may pan fry it in olive oil or saute it in butter. Your greens could be kale or mustard greens or all different variations, spinach. Maybe you put red pepper flakes in there. Maybe you put a ton of garlic on there. For your red wine demi-glace, maybe you use Cabernet or Zinfandel or Petite Sirah. Those are all going to have influences. And then Carolyn, just because she's trouble, she's going to put almond butter on top of hers because she thinks it tastes good. All those things are going to affect a pairing, so you have to look at all those things. There are many times when I've had a main protein on a dish, like a steak, and instead I paired a really hoppy rye IPA because of the spice that was put in the sautéed greens. Because as you ate the dish, that was your wow factor. It really brought out all those characteristics. So this young lady's exactly right. It hid the fish, but I was going off of all these other 17 or 18 ingredients that Jensen put in this thing to play with it. So you have to always look at that when you're doing beer and food pairings. That's a really important concept to have, and thank you for reminding me, is go with what the flavor profile is. So whenever possible, try the food and then pair the beer, because you know the beer is not going to change. If it's a stone IPA, it's going to taste the same all the time. So it's really important for you guys to follow through and do those concepts. Are they pouring you guys the next beer finally? Because I know about you guys, I want to get out there and drink. I mean, not that we're not drinking here, but you know. All right, so this is the future of beer. And Jensen's going to come out in a minute and talk about pangenic cooking, where you take fusions from around the world, and it's going to be a world cuisine eventually. That's what the very creative chefs are looking at us. Typical stone long name beer. This is our Chris Baker Insurgente Stone Zocca Vesa. If you don't know how to pronounce it, say it with the Zocca, Z, Zocca Vesa Mocha Stout. And this was our AHA Rally Homebrew Award winner beer. Every year we do a big giant AHA rally at Stone. The winner gets to brew a beer with us and we send it out across the country. This is a very complex beer with ingredients from many continents. It has malts and hops from both Europe and America. It has chocolate. It has chili pepper. It has nutmeg, cinnamon. It's a milk stout, by the way, and it also has, coffee in it. So these are from regions, Madagascar vanilla. You know, different regions where these different ingredients come from, Asia, Africa, South America, Europe, North America. This is the way brewing is going to be. Likewise, with food, you're going to create these great characteristics. So have you guys all tasted this yet? You got the rules. You know how to do it. Do your two combined sips and dig in. Just save a little for the food, please. The aroma on this is intense. You get... It's arbol chili, so it's kind of a sweeter, smoky chili. So you get that smoky chili resonance. You get great coffee, chocolate. I'm picking up nutmeg right off the nose. On the palate, you get that classic creaminess from a milk stout. It's kind of like a Mexican hot chocolate, if you've ever had one of those. That's what I relate it to. And because, you know, If we don't treat our earth right, another point I made to Jensen when I was saying this is a perfect beer because it really follows that pangenic nature, this may be all you're eating in the future is a carrot, and you're going to have to season it very well. But when he tells you the ingredients he put on there, it's quite amazing. But I thought that was appropriate the way he did that. Is he coming out yet? I want him to talk about his food before they cut us off. How many of you guys like this beer? How many of you hate it? Oh, everybody on that side liked it. Nobody put their hand up on this side because you haven't had it yet. You're supposed to lie to me. You're all supposed to say yes. I'm very fragile. Let me know when you get it what you think. I think you guys are going to like it, though. We don't have it at the booth, but it's quite delicious. All right, Jensen, come on up here and tell them about this wonderful
And here dish. He comes.
You guys. How were the tacos? God, I love those. I could eat those all day. So this last dish is about the future. Ooh. So one of the things that actually we are even currently doing right now, and you're going to see a lot more of this, I think, in the culinary world, is meat is becoming more and more scarce and more expensive. Same with seafood. And so what we did here is we're doing this at some of the restaurants that I've worked at and consulted at and stuff, is treating vegetables like meat. So what we did with these carrots is we dry rubbed them like you would ribs, and then slow roasted them, and then seared them hard. So when you eat this carrot, it's really, really meaty, for lack of a better term. It's something I guarantee you're going to see a lot more of. And it's amazing to see how a carrot can take on these really, really umami characteristics, this real richness, the savoriness that you would expect from meat. So that's the idea behind the carrot. Then one of the other things you're going to see a lot of is a lot more preserving methods. So we went a little molecular with you, and we have a lardo. So basically pork back fat that we salted and then rendered down and use a compound called tapioca maltodextrin, which basically dehydrates fats. So that powder on the plate right there that you guys will see in a second used to be pork fat. And when you put it back in your mouth, as soon as it hits liquid, you'll get that pork sensation, which is really, really fun. And then the jicama, we poached in a little bit of goat's milk with some agave, which kind of gives it this funkiness, kind of like you'd get from a goat cheese. So again, cheese, I think, is going to be something that you see less and less and less of, but a flavor profile that I think is really profound and people really enjoy. So we took a simple vegetable like jicama, poached it in the goat's milk, and so you kind of get this cheese flavor from it, this cheesiness, if you will. And then lastly, the dark sauce on the plate is a sweet soy sauce that we cook down with wort that we get from our friends at Great Divide. So we cook that down, the wort, that sweet liquid, before it becomes beer. You cook it down, it gets really bready. You can turn it into basically a caramel, and we infuse that with a sweet soy sauce, so you get that really sticky, deep, rich, intense flavor, and you get that breadiness. So this is our last beer component. So you had hops in the first dish, you had yeast in the second dish, and now you have the wort, so you're getting that grain in this third dish. So bon appetit. Thank you guys so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jensen. Let's have a round of applause. Just like beer created civilization. Oh, you guys didn't know that? Beer created civilization. I unfortunately don't have time to go into that, but you can corner me at some place and I'll tell you how. It's obviously going to extend civilization because you can use all those things in your food processes. So what do you think of that dish? That's a pretty intense dish, right? Pretty amazing. Well, most of us still have beer in our glasses. I want to do a toast real quick before they kick us out of here and let everybody out there hear it. It's a toast I've been doing for about 20 years. On the count of three, I want us all to, at the top of our lungs, say all hail craft beer, okay? Let everybody out there hear it. One, two, three, all hail craft beer! Cheers, everyone. Let's hear it for our servers. Thank you for coming out. I'll be around here if you have any questions for the next few minutes. Cheers, everybody.
And let's hear for Dr. Bill Cizik and Jensen Cummins. You like it? Good stuff? Still coming out. So hang in here.
We haven't forgot you. Next time you got to come early and sit in the front.
Does anybody have any questions before Dr. Bill gets off stage? Questions?
What were the spices on the carrots?
What were the spices on the carrots?
I don't know. I can't answer that question. That's a Jensen question.
Jensen, come on out.
Jensen, we need you.
We need you, Jensen.
Excellent. All right, thank you.
I have a brother-in-law who's going to marry my sister, and he was a Coors Light drinker. Then all of a sudden, he changed to being a Chardonnay drinker. And I can't get him to enjoy any kind of really good craft beer. He just, like, tries and he's like, I don't like it. It's too hoppy. It's whatever. Right. What do I do with that? I mean, I want to like this guy. You know, he's going to marry my sister. But, I mean, he doesn't like craft beer. So, I got to draw
enough.
A line.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you keeping reserved about it until he comes around. So I've converted tens of thousands of people literally over the years to get drink craft beer. So a lot of people, when they walk into a bar, they say, they see a craft beer bar, they go, I want a light beer. And we're always thinking, my servers and bartenders at Stone are always thinking, oh, they must be talking about our 4.2% session IPA. No, they're talking about light in flavor. And so that's what the biggest issue is. So gateway beers are the perfect thing. So a couple ways you can do it. You can obviously start with the classic Pilsner or Kolsch to get them into it, because you can't give them a double IPA right away, otherwise they cringe and curl up in a ball in the corner. So you can start with the Pilsner or Kolsch, but a couple other good beers that they may have been influenced by would be a Hefeweizen or a Belgian Wit. And so if you guys are out early in the morning, you know, we might have a Wit. Like, I like Wit with my yogurt and fresh fruit in the morning for breakfast. So you can do things like that. But a Pilsner or a Kolsch are a really good start. You can maybe start with even an import and then go into something like Pivo Pils from Matt Brindelson at Firestone, which I think won the gold again this year.
Yes, it did.
It did? Yeah, it's a great beer. He's a very talented brewer. Start with that and then gradually advance them. Then if you guys are sitting around and you're eating some cheese or something, you could pair something with it. Or if he likes chocolate, give them a light milk stout, something like that. But just segue them into it. But the great gateway beers are very critical to do. So it's really important.
Okay, just one more.
Okay.
I have a question for particular pairings for Indian cuisine. They don't have a strong alcohol or beer tradition at all there. Sometimes people say IPA, but I found sometimes it accentuates the spice and flavor
too much. Sorry. Oh, Indian cuisine.
For Indian cuisine.
So you're right. Indian cuisine is a very tricky thing. Not overly tricky for beer, though. If you don't want to accentuate the spice, you can use a German Märzen, Doppelbock, or you can also use a Belgian Dubbel. But you could also slightly accentuate the spice by doing a great American rye IPA, for example, or amber ale works really well. Everybody thinks when they go to an Indian restaurant, the restaurateurs always think, oh, we need spicy wine with it, so they'll have spicy red wines. If I owned all the Indian restaurants in the United States, we'd only serve Gewürztraminer and Riesling, because with wine, you have to have very sweet. Beer, you can go sweeter with the Doppelbocks and Dunkels, but you can also go a little bit hoppy, so you still have that flavor, but you're really calming the palate across, and it'll handle everything from all the different regions of India. So something like Ruthless Rye, or even a beer like Levitation or Arrogant Bastard, an amber ale with a good caramel and toffee backbone, will go really well with Indian food. All right?
Okay, thank
you. All right, cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everybody. Have a great GABF.